Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, polar exploration and juices.
Sometimes the ice opens up and you see that dark water that reminds you that you're actually skiing on top of an ocean. I've been in situations in the start when I thought that, wow, this is never going to work. Then it gets completely black,
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for all of your support. So I want to get right to our first guest. He is the first person to complete a solo expedition across Antarctica, and he has also crossed the North Pole in the middle of Arctic night. This is polar explorer Børge Østlund. What is it about polar exploration? What is it about it that called to you?
It's extremely dynamic. It's extremely fascinating when you're out there. You have to walk across pressure ridges. Sometimes the ice opens up and you see that dark water that reminds you that you're actually skiing on top of an ocean. You have polar bears lurking around, and you're always drifting. You never wake up in the same place. So I think it's the dramatic landscape and the nature that appeals to me in a way. You are totally dependent on yourself and what you have to bring with you.
I get that this is hard. Like, I understand that it's hard, but I don't really understand it. Is there a way you could like put it in perspective? Like, okay, how difficult is this to kind of really travel in these places?
Yeah, like, okay, for instance, the North Pole, it's from the coast to the North Pole, which is the treks that I have done mostly. And also I've done some crossing all over Antarctica and the Arctic. So it's 1,000 kilometers and I'm bringing everything I need for the whole journey. So my sled, close to 300 pounds, I guess, to be self-supplied all along the way. And there is huge pressure ridges because the ice is moving and is crushing together that you have to climb across. And I did mention also the open water that you sometimes have to paddle or swim across. So it is extremely, extremely difficult and hard on your body and maybe sometimes also your mind. I also have to add the extreme cold that you have, you know, down to minus 40. And to be able to master those kind of situation all alone by yourself for 2 months self-supplied is a great satisfaction simply. But that's one of the things that appeals to me.
Is it more physically or mentally demanding?
I think for solo treks up there, it's more mental. You are alone with all your decisions, all your worries. You have to be the patient and doctor in the same person. You know, you have to pull yourself up from that hole that you sometimes fall into when you are by yourself and everything looks dark and you're afraid of being alone and you're longing for home and you're not sure if you're going to make it or not. And then you have to try to motivate yourself, you know, to keep on going the next day and the next day and the next day. So I think it's mostly mental on solo treks. But when that is said, the mental and the solo part is also the best part the whole trip when you are able to master it, because you do get a totally different dialogue with yourself and the nature when there is no one else to lean on and to rely on. So it's also a kind of meditation, I think, on this trips that enables you to get closer to yourself and also closer to nature and maybe the universe.
Like, I couldn't imagine being, you know, I know one of your trips where you were basically alone going across for what, roughly 60 days. Does that wear on you? Are you like, do you get sick of your just being by yourself, essentially?
No, not really. Well, I think if you are able to make it the first couple of weeks and you get into the flow, then it doesn't really matter if the trip takes 1 month or 3 months. I think you have been able to become friends with yourself and the nature. And when you reach that stage in yourself, then it doesn't matter how long the trip takes. The first couple of weeks is critical in my experience. When you come from a warm bed, you have said goodbye to your friends and you just take the first steps out on that ice with a super heavy sled and maybe 1,000 kilometers or 600 miles to go. You know, those first days, that's the hard part. And then that's when you really, really need to dig deep.
Did you ever think about just turning right around right at the beginning? Like, oh, man.
Yeah, of course. Well, in one way, yes, and also no. I've been in situations in the start when I thought that, wow, this is never going to work, you know. But at the same time, I didn't want to give up because I told everyone that I was going to ski alone to the North Pole, so I couldn't just throw in the towel. But I was not able to really find a good way to continue. But what I did back then was to fool myself further. I said to myself, okay, what's the reality here? It's not your leg that's broken. It's not your ski that's broken. This is all about feelings, and feelings will change if you give it some time. And I said that, okay, you can give up, but not today. Tomorrow, but not today. Knowing that feelings will change over time. And when tomorrow came, I said the same thing. And after a couple of weeks, I thought, okay, well, I've been here 2 weeks. Maybe I can continue all the way. And then I started to lift my head and think about the goal. I think it's possible to work on your feelings, even if you are in a tight spot and think it's hopeless and you're not going to make it. It is possible to work on your feelings.
What was that like when you saw another person after all that time?
Strange. You become a stranger to other people, in a way. Other people becomes, you don't know how to behave. It takes a while, actually, to know how to relate with other people when you've been away for a long time.
It is amazing our capacity to adjust.
It is.
Like,
incredible.
We just get used to whatever situation that we're in.
So that capacity is what makes us unique, I think.
I don't know, obviously, very much about the North Pole or the South Pole, but when I imagine it, like, I am just imagining a long, white, flat tundra.
Well, the South Pole is a little bit like that. The South Pole is just a huge, enormous ice cap, basically, and enormous distances. It's more or less the same every day. And that's why I also think that a big trip in Antarctica is more a mental challenge because the landscape is so monotone. But on the North Pole, it's a lot more that happens because of the pack ice. You know, you're actually skiing. Maybe most people are not really aware that at the North Pole itself, it's more than 4,000 meter deep ocean. It's just a thin layer of ice on the top there that you're skiing on top, and just a thin frozen kind of pancake that is moving around and creating all these fissures and cracks and big towers of ice because of the enormous force up there. So North Pole is never, never boring or it's more like you have to watch yourself all the step along the way. But Antarctica can be a little bit more of a mental challenge just because of that enormous landscape. It's so big. But even in Antarctica, you know, I'm able to penetrate that lonely landscape. And I do find in the snow, there is fissures and shapes in the snow. So it's still possible to penetrate that landscape and kind of become friends with Antarctica. But it takes a while.
When you're in the North Pole, so like you'd essentially camp for the night and then end up in a different location because the ice is moving?
You always drift somewhere at the North Pole. It's a very dynamic place. When you pitch your tent, you have drifted from just a few hundred meters maybe on a quiet night and to up to several miles if it's a stormy night. And it's really the wind that is pushing on the ice, making it drift up there. So because all this jagged ice, the pressure ridges, as we call them, they stick up and they become like sails pushed with the wind, and the ice starts to drift because of the wind.
So then how do you account for that, right? Because that seems like, man, you got to have every variable figured out before you start, but then who knows how far you're going to drift on any given day.
You never know. So you just have to walk straight north because you don't know how far you're going to drift. In most cases, it evens out in the end of the day. You know, sometimes you have the drift with you. Other times you're actually drifting back. And I've been in situations when I woke up after a big storm and I drifted 20 kilometers backwards, so 15 miles backwards. So everything I skied the day before was just lost to drifting back. So it was a bit depressing.
Was there a few cuss words? I would imagine they're like...
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, when the weather is bad, I'm drifting back and things like that, I actually get more motivated because I can't do anything about it. The only thing I can influence is my own performance. So actually, I get more kind of, well, this is a job and I have to just to stick it out and do my best. And that's also the kind of the mental capacity you need to bring in the front of your head, because if you're just sitting there feeling sorry for yourself, you won't make it, you know. And you can't change it. You can't do anything about the weather. You only can influence your own performance.
So how much preparation goes in to an expedition like the ones that you've been on?
About a year, at least the long first ever expedition takes a long time to prepare because I have to try to find the answer to how to do it, basically. And the last big trip I did was crossing the Arctic Ocean in the dark with my good friend Mike Horn from South Africa. And then, you know, nobody had done it like that. We had to find the right time of year to do it. We need to figure out how much food we were going to bring. And what, you know, how many batteries. We knew most of the trip was going to be in the dark, so we needed batteries for our headlamps for 2-3 months. Lots of interesting problems that we had to dive into and find solutions to. So it took about a year to prepare.
Why do it in the dark?
Yeah, why do it in the dark? Oh, the reason is that, to start out with, we wanted really to do a classical North Pole expedition, just like the old explorers did back in the days, you know, from the Golden Age and the late 1800s and early 1900s, and to go all the way from Alaska to Norway via the North Pole. And to do that, the only time of year you can penetrate far enough into the polar ocean by boat is in the end of the summer, really kind of, September, because that's when the ice has melted enough that we're able to sail into the Arctic Ocean with a sailing ship and get onto the ice. But that also means that winter is coming, you know, winter is coming in September as well. So that little tiny window between winter and summer, that's what we had to find. But that also meant that most of this trip was going to be in the dark because the sun goes down at the North Pole 23rd of September, and then it doesn't rise again for another 6 months. So there were a few challenges that we had to overcome on that trip. But we managed to do it. It took us 87 days to cross the Arctic Ocean on skis in the winter.
Is it, I've only seen videos. Is it dark? Like, okay, it's dark. Or is it kind of...
In the beginning, when the sun goes down, it's kind of twilight for a couple of weeks because the sun doesn't go down like in equator. It doesn't go down in a sack. It goes very slowly along the horizon. But when it's far enough down there, it gets completely black. Completely black, when it's overcast and you turn off your headlamp, you don't see your friend sitting next to you. That's how dark it gets. You also get clear nights when you have full moon, and then you can actually see a little bit what's around you, but you'd still need the headlamp to see the fissures in the snow and all the dangers that lurks around. So you need headlamps. So we were on headlamps for 2 months on that trip, actually. And then you need a good battery system, because without headlamps, you will not survive.
Yeah, how did you bring enough batteries for that?
Yeah, it's just we brought 10 kilos of batteries.
I don't know if I can quantify this, right? But like when you go on one of those expeditions, like how much leeway are you generally giving yourself in the sense of like, okay, I've got food for 85 days, but if this lasts 89, I'm done.
10 days margin. And I honestly thought that the trip would take 75 days. That's why we took 85. But we had a little bit of a challenge with the weather, and we were drifting back more than expected. So that's why the trip actually took 87 days instead of 75. And my sled broke, lots of things happened. And my friend Mike, he went through the ice and into the ice cold water. So that took another day. So we kind of lost days in a lot of different situations and ended up with really pushing the envelope towards the end there. So, and barely made it.
Man.
It was a close call towards the end there. I had half a liter of fuel left when we got to the boat.
What is that like when you end the expedition and see, like, there's the finish line?
We had the ship that we were skiing towards that had sailed up from Norway and into the ocean on the other side, as far into the ice that the open water would take her. So the ship couldn't get any further north, so we had to reach a ship that was our way out of the polar ocean. And when you get closer to that goal, and it's just like, everything you dreamt of is inside that ship. And suddenly when you reach it, there is nothing more to long for. So it's a big, big paradox, I feel, to reach a goal like that, and that everything is within reach. You can eat as much as you want. You can take that shower you have been longing for, and there is a bed, and it's a huge paradox. It's very, very strange to reach that goal on a big trip like that.
Does it make regular life boring, though, in any way, right? Like on Tuesday, I was up here at the North Pole, trekking across, moving ice, and now it's Thursday and I got to do taxes.
No, I don't think so. I heard some other kind of colleagues of mine thinking those lines or ways, but I don't do that. I think it's also because I feel privileged. I feel so privileged that I have my family, my friends, and everything around me. No one can kind of be in the moment all the time, and you can't expect that. So that is why it's so important to break off sometimes and just go out into the nature.
Are you ready for some harder/listener-submitted questions?
Sure.
North Pole or South Pole? Which one's your favorite?
I would say the North Pole, simply because it's so dynamic. And also that's where I've done, my biggest expeditions. So definitely the North Pole, yeah. It's more things happening at the North Pole.
What food did you crave the most while traveling?
I, oh, yeah, it's you are you get so hungry on those big trips out there, and you crave for anything with fat inside. So big American pancakes with blueberry jam and maple syrup and sour cream, bacon, yeah, on the side, that goes down. And that's something you dream about.
After going on an expedition for almost 90 days with somebody, do you feel like you've heard everything that person has to say?
Yeah, in a way.
What was your scariest experience out there?
That's connected with the water, going through the water or through thin ice and into the water on the North Pole. That's happened one time all the way and several times on there, misses. And if it's minus 40, you don't have much time before you get too weak to get up again. And almost all the big accidents at the North Pole has, you know, fatal accidents where people die, has been in connection with the thin ice and water.
When those kind of incidents have happened, and it, right, like, is it usually somebody wasn't prepared or because they just got unlucky?
No, well, speaking for myself, you know, you get tired and there can be snow covering some of these traps so you don't see them. You know, accidents just happens. But also maybe it can also happen because you take too big risks, which is always a balance. You can't reach the North Pole without taking some risk, and you have to find that fine balance between what risk is acceptable and what is too much. And when you're solo, you don't have anyone else, you know, to guide you to say, okay, hey, stop, this is too dangerous. So you really have to, so that's also why it's so dangerous to be alone, because you get a little bit sloppy and it's into the routine. And then one day you take that risk that is too big, and then maybe that's it. So that's always a kind of a battle in your head. You probably don't know that, but my profession back in the days, I was a deep sea diver in the oil industry. And what I learned, I did that for 10 years, and, you know, with saturation diving, as it's called, and diving down to 1,000 feet and super deep and in the dark and lots of accidents. But what we knew who worked down there in the dark these oil fields was that the only one you really can trust is yourself. So I always looked upon safety as a personal responsibility. And that I took that, you know, attitude with me into the expeditions. And I think the secret is to be that little step ahead of yourself all the time. Try to understand what is happening before it happens. And if something goes wrong, you have trained for it. I train. I'm going out on thin ice, and I'm going through ice, thin ice, deliberately back home here in Norway, just to find out the right techniques to get up again. So you have to be able to go into a dangerous situation and do it in a safe way by training. That's my philosophy.
Is there any kind of forgiveness, I guess, in those kind of places? Is there any kind of like, okay, you can make a little mistake and you can get away with it, or like, you can't mess up at all here?
No. Especially not on solo expeditions. When you're with other people, you normally have an extra helping hand to pull you up, but not on solo expedition. Then you have one chance to get up before your hands and legs are losing power, and then you can just lie there and hope you had a good life and think back, but that's it.
That's the height of pressure, right? Like, I've got one chance to get out of this, and if I don't, I'm done.
That's it.
Do you think that the poles could become like Everest in the sense that there could be kind of an over-commercialization of them at all?
Yeah, it's actually turning like that, turning into that. Especially in Antarctica, there is quite a lot of skiers and people flying into the South Pole just to be there. So that has really, really changed compared to when I did my first expedition up there in 1990. Then North Pole was just mentally just super, super far away. Nobody went there. But now it's actually possible to go to both poles and drink a glass of champagne and go back home. So yeah, the same thing is happening.
Do you, when like the times that you've been back since those first expeditions, like can you see changes?
Yeah, definitely. It's a huge change compared to, you know, when I did the first expeditions in the early 90s, the ice was 3 to 4 meter thick. Now it's 1 to 2 meter, and also the coverage is about 30% less. So actually on the North Pole, that is where you are physically seeing the result of climate change. So it's a really just a totally different landscape compared to 30, 40 years ago.
Any other big expeditions? You think you got any really big ones left?
Well, for me, I'm doing a project called Ice Legacy. I'm doing it together with a friend of mine called Vincent Colliard, and where we're crossing the biggest ice caps in the world to sort of try to tell what is happening with these huge pieces of ice. So that's what we're doing, trying to cross the 20 biggest ice caps. So the next goal will most likely be Juneau Icefield in Alaska, not too far from you guys.
Is there kind of a holy grail of polar exploration left? Is there something that like, this is, if somebody does this, this is going to be big?
Yeah, there is not many left since I've been fortunate enough to kind of pull off most of them. or a few of them. But there is one left, and that is to ski to the South Pole during wintertime. That has been tried, but no one has succeeded. So that's up for grabs if anyone wants to have a go.
Is that something, though, that like, okay, that's doable? Or like, you could do this, but I don't think you're coming back.
I think it's doable, but it's extremely difficult. But as the knowledge kind of increases and the equipment gets better, but you can imagine that in the winter on the South Pole Plateau, it's down to minus 60 degrees Celsius, and you have strong wind in addition. I think you would have to ski more or less inside the box to be able to survive up there. But I think it's possible. But I'm not going to try it. I'll leave that to someone coming behind me.
That's pretty much all the questions that we have. Is there anything that you think that we missed, or what's kind of coming up next for you? How can people learn more?
I think we covered quite a lot this nice talk that we have. Thank you very, very much. The place, if people want to see more of what we're doing, I have a website called ausland.com. OUSLAND.com. So that's one place that people can have a look, and or my Instagram and Facebook profiles.
I want to thank Birge so much for joining us, and apologize for probably mispronouncing his name. I did the best that I could. But if you want to connect with him and learn more about his expeditions, we have linked to him on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube, and we've also included his information in the episode description. If you want to see more of his expeditions, the YouTube version of this interview will be live on February 1st at 12:30 p.m. Pacific. So real quick, I want to take a moment and thank one of the sponsors of our show, Factor. Factor has ready-to-eat meal delivery service that takes the stress out of meal planning and sets you up for success in the new year. I just got a delivery at my house, and it is awesome. It looks good. It tastes good. It's healthy. It's a great way to start the new year, and it's cheaper than getting takeout. It's much healthier, and it's way, way easier. Because you don't have to cook it at all. All you've got to do is just pop it in the oven in the microwave, and then in 2 minutes, it is ready to go. Like I mentioned, they are delicious, And there's so many different options. Keto, calorie smart, vegan, veggie, all kinds of different options. And right now, they are offering a special discount. You can get 50% off. All you've got to do is head to factormeals.com/pointless50 and enter the code pointless50 to get 50% off. That's code pointless50 at factormeals.com/pointless50. I know that's a lot to remember, so there's a link in the description that includes those codes. They're great. It's really good. It's really good. Okay, now let's bring in John Shull and get to the pointless part of the show. What is the most amount of time that you have ever spent alone? Completely alone. Not talking to anybody, not texting.
Without, like, communicating at all? That's including texts, everything?
Not talking to another person in any way.
You know, I don't know. Maybe an hour or two? Maybe?
Oh, that's it?
Even when I was alone in Orlando, like when I lived alone, I wasn't dating somebody, I was still texting people usually.
I mean, at first glance, I'm like, wait a minute, no, that's a hard, not very much time. But then now that I think about it, it's not more than a couple of hours. Maybe, it's not more than a couple of hours for me.
It's kind of wild when you really think about how unalone and now connected we are. Even if you say you're not connected, I still feel like you're connected.
Even when I would say, like, the loneliest part of my life, which is my first real job when I moved to a different city after graduating college and didn't really have any friends, I don't, even then, probably not more than maybe like 8 hours. Because I would go to the gym, come home to my apartment, and basically just be there until the next day when I went, like, grocery shopping or back to the gym.
Yeah, but were you really alone? Were you not messaging anybody, your family, a friend, an acquaintance, we'll call them?
Maybe. How do you handle being alone? Do you feel like you handle being alone well, or do you kind of go crazy?
It's funny that you say that. Back in the day, I loved it. I loved being alone. I loved the alone time. I loved doing what I wanted. Now, and you get this, and maybe others out there that are listening to this as well, having children has completely changed the game for me. If I have, you know, if the wife says, hey, I'm going out, you know, I put the kids down, I have maybe 4 or 5 hours to myself, I sit around wondering what I can do. And then by the time I finally get around to doing something, whether it's for myself or whatever, she's back home. Like, so I just waste the time thinking about what to do.
There is something that changes, I feel like, once you have kids, that you just are always busy. You always have to feel like you're doing something. And for people who are like looking at their parents and like, why are they always doing something? Like, it just gets in you and you can't ever just sit.
Yeah, even right now recording this, I want to get up and just start cleaning something.
Well, I mean, it needs to by the look of your house behind you. I actually polled the audience. Same question. What is the longest you have ever been totally alone? 18% say a few hours. 25% say one day. 42% say a week or less. But I feel like that's pretty high. I wonder if they're really thinking about it in terms of like, no, not talking to anybody. And then 13% say more than a week. And usually they specified it in comments saying stuff like, I got injured and I couldn't leave my house. Or there's some extenuating circumstances.
But did you put in the question being on your phone means you're not alone?
I did put no contact in person or electronically with another person. But I don't know how much people really thought that through.
And some people, the majority of the voters say a week or less, I call shenanigans on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could be 2 days. I could see a weekend. I could see people going a weekend without dealing with anybody. Maybe you went camping by yourself or something like that, but even then you walk past somebody.
Yeah.
I would say most people it's only a few hours if you really thought about it.
I'm not even sure if I was to like barricade myself in my house without my family, if I'd be able to go a couple hours without communicating with anybody.
Oh, yeah, it would be tough. People need people, man. Some people don't, but I think people need people. The other question that I had for you, so obviously the Super Bowl is coming up. We have the Chiefs against the San Francisco 49ers. So how long into the broadcast, once the game starts, how quickly after the game starts do we hear Taylor Swift's name mentioned or shown?
I really don't want to answer this because I don't give a fuck about the Super Bowl. I'm a Lions fan, and anyone that follows American football will understand why I don't care at all now. But to answer your question and be a team player, I think she will be mentioned at least 10 minutes before kickoff. And I think the first time Travis Kelce is involved at all, even if he has a block, even if he, you know, they'll say Travis Kelce and, oh, here's Taylor Swift. So if Kansas City goes on offense first, it'll be within 5 minutes.
Oh, I think it's within the first minute. I think it's within the first minute of kickoff, probably being shown in the national anthem, but I don't think that counts. My guess, put a number on it. Put a time on it. I'm going to say within the first minute.
I'll say within the first 4 minutes.
Okay. Okay. I also think that if she goes, this is the end of both her, Travis Kelce, and the Chiefs in America's mind. We're going to be completely sick of it. It's going to be so oversaturated that we'll be completely sick of it if she's at the Super Bowl.
Well, we just better hope that they never break up, because imagine the coverage of that.
Oh, my God. This is why people dislike the media. Like, we don't want to hear these things, but they force it down their throat. Okay, anyway, there's my rant about the Super Bowl.
Well, it's forced down your throat because people tune in.
Okay, you still work in the media. I used to work in the media, so I feel like I can speak more freely about this. I don't think that people really care that much. I think the media covers something over and over and over and over and over and over again until eventually you finally start wondering about it. Like, you don't really care. They make you care.
I mean, I think that's documented in some cases. I mean, the NFL cares, really, so they're going to make all of their broadcasts with her, that if she's there, they're going to make it a point, because that's how they retain some of a demographic that they have never hit before. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's at the end, it all comes down to advertising dollars, right?
It's all money.
I did see something that she's like playing the night before in Japan and then has to catch a flight to Vegas, and she'll get there maybe with like 6 hours to spare if she leaves literally right after a concert or something.
This is why I think that if her PR people are really, like, in tune, they will not go to the Super Bowl. Because I think it will be just complete oversaturation, and we'll be sick of her, we'll be sick of the Kelces, we'll be sick of the Chiefs, we'll be sick of all of that stuff. We're already over it.
I mean, once again, we are, but the young girls that now watch football or watch the Chiefs games because of her aren't. The moms with those girls aren't. Even adult women aren't. Maybe some men aren't. I have no idea.
Anyway, okay.
All right, let's get to some people that actually matter here. Let's give some shout-outs. Let's see, we'll start with Cole Rafferty. I like that first name of Cole.
Yeah, it's one of those limited names.
Yeah.
If there's not a lot of them, it's okay.
Just sounds badass. Like, here's Cole. Cole's going to come whip your ass. Anyways, Kevin Parra, Jeff Harris, Ryan Nguyen, Parker Woolenweber. I'm sure
that's a good one.
Butchered that last name, but it sounds right.
Yeah, it's a pretty good chance.
Dawson Oliver, Davis Fryhoff, Austin Wiki, Bone Lepold, Keegan Grant, and we're going to end with a little bit of alliteration here, Mark Mayhew.
Is Mark Mayhew a famous person? That sounds like a famous person's name.
Maybe. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. All right. Good talk.
All right. We doing...
That's 3 weeks in a row. You were a little... Okay. All right. Enjoy it.
Well, I was talking... Are we doing that first or COTM first?
It's not Candle of the Month. This episode goes out on a Wednesday, which is January 31st, so it is not a new month.
God damn it. I thought... okay. That's fine. We'll just push it to next week.
You got to wait. Sorry.
I've done this. I get so excited that I forget that there's 31 days and months sometimes. All right, fine.
Do the knuckle trick. Don't you know the knuckle trick?
No, I don't know the knuckle trick.
The knuckle trick. If it's on a knuckle, it's got 31 days. So you start on January on the knuckle,
Then you go in between, and it's February. Then March is a knuckle. That's 31. April, May, June, July. So if it's a knuckle, it's got 31 days.
When you think that someone discovered that or came up with that, do you think they were like, wow, I'm the smartest person alive?
I mean, I don't know if they thought that they were the smartest person alive, but I think that that was a pretty good way to teach it. My wife is a teacher, and we had this conversation while high the other day, and that I don't think that we give teachers enough credit because of how hard it is to teach someone how to do something. As a parent, you know that, like, teaching someone, like, how do you do this? And I think that people who aren't educators think that, like, oh, you just tell them that. But, like, no, it's really complicated. Like, how do you do this? Well, go left. Well, I don't know how to, like, well, how do you shift your body weight? Like, explain that to a five-year-old. Teachers need more credit is my bottom line. It's hard to teach people things.
I'm paying more money. Pay him. I'm all about it. Someday when you and I run for presidency, you can be my vice president. We'll make sure that happens.
I'd be your vice president. If you were the vice president, any vice president, would you secretly be wishing for something to happen to the president even briefly so that you could say that you're president at that moment? If somebody ever asked me to be vice president, I'd be like, I'll do it, but only if you promise that you're going to go under anesthesia at some point so I can be president for like 20 minutes.
Like it's written that into would be your my contract rule. Or whatever?
Yeah, I would feel like that would have to be some kind of agreement.
I'm not going to lie to you, just the thought of having to campaign as a vice president sounds terrible because you get no recognition. No one really cares about you, but yet you're expected to perform all the duties.
Yeah, you got to be ready, but you don't have any of that big pressure. It's nobody like, where's the vice president? Like, don't worry about it. Like, we really don't worry that much about the vice president, which is kind of crazy.
We don't.
Like, yeah, no idea where they are right now. No clue.
Anyways, all right, let's it's funny that we'll do the if you haven't listened to the last couple episodes, I came up with this brilliant idea basically to have 10 topics and Nick just reacts, whether it's hopefully just a word, but sometimes it's more than that. So anyways, randomly enough, the first one that I wrote down is kind of along the Super Bowl lines. And what do you think the average ticket price as of this recording is for the Super Bowl?
It's in Vegas, right?
Yes.
$2,000.
Times that by five.
$10,000 to go to the Super Bowl.
For an average ticket, according to TickPick. Like, that's not even, I'm assuming that's not a great seat. That's not a premium seat. That's just an okay seat.
Okay. I've worked in a television market as a news reporter where they had the Super Bowl. It's pretty overrated. It's one of those things that I think it would be fun if you had a lot of money where you can just go and do whatever you want. Otherwise, it looks like it'd be a massive pain in the ass. Probably not that fun. Wouldn't put $10,000 for that. No way.
I mean, from a media point of view, because I was planning on sending a crew to the Super Bowl. You know, I think what a lot of people think is because you're in the media, you get all these privileges at these things. We would have had one on-field pass for one person at a time. Everyone else had to go into a watch room in the basement. Like, you don't even get to enjoy the game.
No. That's one of the things that I would say as a former reporter is, like, you get to do all these things, but it's like you're not really there.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you're enjoying it. You're there to work. It's like, it's not that great. $10,000. That's crazy. Is that a record?
I didn't say it, but I'm sure it would for an average ticket, which is surprising to me because both these teams are known and they're established franchises. But I mean, the matchup isn't, I mean, Patrick Mahomes versus Brock Purdy. I mean, yeah.
Oh, I'm not really interested in it. I would have been interested in anything else. Okay.
All right. Donald Duck.
I don't care about Donald Duck.
Kind of like the vice president.
He's always annoyed me. He's always annoyed me.
All right.
I've been annoyed by Donald Duck.
All right. Checkbooks.
Do you remember learning how to balance your checkbook? That was a thing that I learned in high school is how to balance a checkbook. And now I don't even remember how to write a check.
I mean, I wrote a check the other day.
Yeah, but I've probably written maybe two or three a year. maybe two or three checks a write a year. Only if they're like, it's 3% to pay on cash or pay with a credit card. And I'm like, well, I'm going to write you a fucking check, and you got to figure out what to do with it.
All right. Armadillo. What the fuck? Armadillos.
No, that's a sweet animal. That's an animal that you like to think about but never actually want to see. I've seen an armadillo because I used to live in Kansas, and sometimes you'll see them on the side of the road. They're kind of like a gross, nasty-looking animal. But in cartoons and stuff like that, it seems pretty cool. Like, I can just ball up and roll away. Better imagined than seen.
doping bans in the Olympic Games.
Oh, just a waste of time for everybody.
Right.
I don't put any hate on any of the people who are in the Olympics, but every single one of them is probably taking something, and I don't believe that any of them are not. And I would absolutely do the same thing. It seems like a total waste of time.
And it always seems like it's the, you know, gymnasts or the ice skaters. Like, it's never like the power lifters or the, you know, the people that are steering the luge or anything. It's always like these sports that are like finesse sports.
I think they really have to be egregious to get caught at this point. Like, you've got to really be egregious to get caught. But I think every single one of them is doing it, and I don't blame them whatsoever.
All right. Record players.
I don't know if I've ever even seen one. Besides the snobby one that you have in your house, which you bought to make look like wood because you're a snob.
Well, good memory. That's not the truth, but whatever. What's your first kind of player that you remember having? Like a cassette player, a Walkman?
Cassette player. Yeah. I remember having a cassette player that was in the basement, and like it was one of those that was front facing, so you popped it out and you put it in and you would play it like that. I don't think we ever had a record player at our house.
Sure you did. I'm just sure your mom and dad kept it from you because you probably would have destroyed it.
I probably would have wrecked it a little bit. Maybe it was like in the basement, never used. We weren't a musical family.
I mean, anyways, spoons.
I don't really know how much, you know what, I think this is my thought on spoons. I think that we can really get rid of one of the utensils that we have. If we want to really reduce waste, we can get rid of one of the three utensils. We don't need a fork, a knife, and a spoon. We can either combine something or make do without one of them, but we don't need three utensils anymore. We don't need it. Combine it or get rid of one.
I mean, really, whoever created this fork is legendary, revolutionary even.
One of the best inventions of all time, if you think about it. The spork.
All right. sidewalk chalk.
Oh, just a great time. Just a great time, right? Endlessly entertaining for little children. Nice for people to walk by and see. It's impressive. I like sidewalk chalk. I have no problems with it.
Christina Ricci.
Who is she?
Oh, God. I mean, she was Casper, the movie Casper. She was the main love interest of the Casper the Ghost. I think she was also Wednesday Addams in the Addams Family.
Okay. I get her confused with Anna Paquin, Cara Delevingne something. There's a new one like Jenny Ortega that all kind of have that similar kind of like dark brooding kind of look to them. I don't know. That's not description, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
They all have that kind of like Wednesday Addams appeal to them.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't know which one she is.
Well, that was a terrible. I mean, Christina Ricci, I would go on a limb and say of our childhood, so kids that were born, you know, mid 80s to the early 2000s. I mean, I feel like she's one of the actresses that you have to know of.
But which one? What was she in? I can't think of any movies.
I just gave you two examples, Casper and the Addams Family.
Yeah, but I feel like when you're in the Addams Family, you're just Wednesday Addams. Like, they just make you look like that. You don't really look like that, so they all run together in my mind.
Okay. All right. Well, this isn't going to go anywhere.
I'm sorry. I don't know who she is.
It's fine.
I don't have her detailed Wikipedia bio, right? Like, I don't have her baseball trading card.
Do you think she has a baseball trading card?
Let's see. Do they have actors' trading cards? Do they have trading cards for actors?
They do.
Here, they oh, man, you knew that too. You've looked at them. Do you have some?
Yeah. I mean, not anything crazy, but anyways,
wait a minute. Oh, that's her. See, that to me looks exactly like the other people that did it. Like, so yeah. I get them confused. You have how many actors' trading cards do you have?
I don't know, probably less than 50. It's a personal collection, so it's not like I have a lot, but I have bought some of them.
Okay, well, who do you got? Who's your best card?
I have a Nicolas Cage autograph.
Wait, did he autograph the card, or did you buy it and it came autographed?
No, I mean, I went on eBay and I bought an autographed Nicolas Cage card.
How much did you pay for it?
Less than 50, I think. Between 50 and 100 by the time it was said and done. I don't remember.
Oh, see, this is what happens. You're trying to kind of divert. You don't really want to say the truth. Like, oh, well, less than 50. Actually, it was 50 to 100, so it was $99. Why don't we just skip all this and get to the truth? How many actor movie trading cards do you have?
I mean, less than 50. It's probably less than 40, to be honest. I only got into it because a buddy of mine collects certain cards by Topps, a certain series, that there's a lot of autographed cards from, like, pop stars and old, you know, just different eras of celebrity. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, I'd like to have a Gordon Ramsay autographed card. Like, that's kind of dope.
That's something that, like, if somebody was giving that away for free, I would be like, no. I'm just going to throw this in the trash 2 steps after I walk past you.
I mean,
like, I would never even think of, like, collecting. Okay, who else do you have? You got Nicolas Cage? Give me your top three. Just give me your top three.
Oh, man. Well, so the other thing is, a lot of mine are dual. So, like, I have, like, a John Cena card. Like an autograph, where he's just in regular street clothes, so it's not a wrestling card, but it's not like an actor's card. So it's kind of in the middle.
Yeah, they can make multiple. He can be on multiple fronts. Okay, all right.
Yeah, I will say my probably my favorite card. I wish I had it. It's not an autograph, but it's a Bernie Sanders card. Probably one of my favorite celebrity cards. If you remember Bernie, I don't know.
He's still alive. You mean Bernie Sanders, the senator, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's like, you know, he's like the vice president. He was here. Now, where is he? Where is Bernie?
No idea. Right? Like, you think you should? How interesting that you have. Do you have any other kind of collectibles?
You don't really care. You're setting me up to make fun of me.
I'm fascinated by this. This is one of the every once in a while I learn something new.
Like, yeah, I mean, I collect
trading cards.
I collect wrestling figures. I collect trading cards. I collect figurines. I also keep a journal, too, if you really want to know.
I keep a journal. I write in it almost every day, or try to. I keep a little journal. I jot down something about that day. And I think that now is also the point of the show where I would like to remind viewers that John has 2 children. He has, in fact, had sex with a woman at least twice. Good job, buddy.
Okay. I mean, you like anime, right? You collect comic books.
No, I don't.
If you out there could only see the look I'm giving Nick.
I don't collect them. I don't. Okay. I watch it when it's on there. I watch some, but I don't collect something of it. I don't collect anything.
By the way, I'm not
besides checks.
Oh boy. I'm not picking on anime, folks, by the way. That wasn't a criticism.
There's different levels of anime. There's like anime like One Piece, Dragon Ball, and then there's like anime like, man, you're getting into some anime. There's different levels of it.
Still don't know what you're referring to.
I don't collect anything.
Well, maybe you should.
I never have.
Maybe you should. You never did Pogs? You never did cards when you were a kid?
Nothing. I've never collected anything.
That's it.
I don't have it. Oh, okay. I thought you were done. Okay, so our top. Yeah. All right. So our top five is top five juices. What's your number five?
So, so there's four that are pretty standard, right? I feel like you have the four that have to be on the list. Five is the wild card.
I'm not entirely. I don't know if I agree with you. I actually only think that two are the dominant juices.
Okay.
That you kind of have to put on there. Otherwise, it's kind of all over the place. All
right.
So I would say only two.
Let's dive in here. My number five is grape juice.
Okay. I have grape juice a little bit higher. A little bit higher. But it's also a specific kind of grape juice. I would say that personally, I don't enjoy plain grape juice. I would never, like, ew, I don't want that.
I don't know if I've ever actually had real grape juice. I've had Welch's grape juice.
Yeah, that's the thing. I like grape flavor. I don't really particularly enjoy grape juice. I don't really like any juice, to be honest with you. I think all juice is a waste of time.
Why are we doing this top five, then?
I don't know. It seemed like an interesting one. Like, I've had juices before. I like to talk about juice. I love talking about things like this. I just don't think that juice is good at all. To me, all juice is a waste of time.
Just get down to it. Don't give you the juice.
Right. Give me. Why wouldn't I just eat the food? I'd rather have that. So my number five is watermelon. I've only had watermelon juice one time, but it changed my life. It was amazing.
I just thought watermelon juice was just water.
Yeah, it is. It's basically like slightly flavored water that's incredibly, it's incredibly refreshing. It was amazing. Sounds but strange. It's hard to get. It's hard to get.
My number four is tomato juice.
I can see it being a top juice, but I find it to be disgusting.
Tomato is one of those juices to me that you kind of have to mix it with a really strong something else for it to taste good. But in saying that, there have been times where I have just chugged V8 by itself.
Oh, I could never do that. I actually hate tomato by itself. I like tomato products like ketchup and things like that. But tomato itself to me is disgusting. Like, I would never just, you want to eat this tomato? Like, no.
Yeah, cherry tomatoes I can eat like that. But, you know, the bigger kind of tomatoes, like a steak tomato? Yeah, not happening.
Also, I was at a restaurant today. I was at a restaurant this weekend, and I bought a burger. It was $20. It was worth it. My wife wanted to go. It was for her birthday. We went to a nicer place. It was a $20 burger. I dropped the tomato on the floor, picked it up, put it back on the burger, and ate it.
Okay, I need you to set the scene here. Are we at like a fancy restaurant, like where people saw you drop the tomato?
Nobody would have seen me, but I think that was more based upon the location. It was, I would say, on a scale of like 1 to 5, with 5 being really nice and 1 being like below fast food. Like, oh, I don't know about that place. They brought out, when you order water and you get water, they bring out a plate that had various different fruits that you could put into the water. I had never seen that before. Wow. But it was a $20 burger in Seattle. So that's probably like maybe $15, $17 anywhere else.
Okay. All right. What kind of, what's the flavor? What's the temperature you like for your burger?
Medium rare. But I order medium rare to try to get it rare.
Okay. That's a different take, I guess.
That's the one thing that I remember learning from my grandpa. The first thing is, like, whatever you want, order something slightly below or slightly above to get it where you actually want it. But it was cooked properly. It was well cooked. I even complimented the chef. Not the chef, but the waiter. It's like, that's well cooked.
Did you have a dessert? Yeah. What was for dessert?
No, I didn't. Oh. I didn't. I thought about it, though.
All right.
I was too full. Okay.
Are we on my, is it you or me?
What was your number four, tomato?
Yeah.
Anyway, would you have eaten the food off the floor? Would you have eaten it off the floor? My wife was horrified, but I was like, it's fine. And there's sauce on it that looks good, so I want that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll eat shit off the floor, of course.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if that's genuous or disingenuous. But anyway, my number four is apple. It's not good. It's not really that great. Everybody makes a big deal about apple like it's great, but it's not. It's okay.
Okay.
It's what you have when you're a kid because everything else is it's cheap. Otherwise, it's not that great.
I think that's too low on in the top five list for apple juice, but...
It's overrated. I know it's ubiquitous and a very prominent, but it's not that great.
It's, I mean, but it's a staple of the juice family. It deserves, I mean... Anyways, we'll get to my thoughts.
It's good. It doesn't mean it's good. Okay.
My number three is cranberry juice.
I feel the same way about cranberry juice as I do about apple juice. It's like, would you really like cranberry juice? Like, oh, that was refreshing. That was so good. I needed that.
I mean, I think so. I like it, and it's one of the better juices for your body in terms of what it can do for your gastrointestinal tract.
Also, a great line from Departed. That's what I essentially remember about cranberry juice, is the movie Departed. Look it up if you want to. My number three is a specific kind of juice. It's white grape. I don't like grape juice, but white grape juice was like, whoa, this is good.
Okay. Okay.
It doesn't have as much punch to it. It's more, it's a smoother. It's like if you mixed kind of apple and grape juice. You're like, oh, that's okay.
Okay.
That's pretty good. Yeah. All right. What's your number two?
Orange juice.
Your number two is orange juice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
okay.
My one and two are pretty, they can be interchangeable, but.
Yeah.
Orange juice is fine, but like I can only drink orange juice, you know, during the morning. I never drink it in the afternoon. I never drink it at night. It's just, it's definitely, I mean, it's a morning juice, right? But it's, I think that's what keeps it at number two for me, is it's not as versatile as my number one.
That actually makes a lot of sense. I would completely disagree. I was completely disagreeing with you going into that, but now that you mentioned it, I was like, oh, okay. I can understand that. My number two is the only juice that I actually think is good, besides watermelon juice, is pineapple juice. That's great. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I just, you don't have it enough, right? I mean, I'm not buying pineapples every week. But I mean, to be honest, right, you get those little fruit cups from like Dole or whatever, or whoever makes them, and pineapple's definitely one of the fruits where I'm like, can't wait to eat all the fruit, then just drink the high fructose corn syrup pineapple juice.
Pineapple juice is actually really, that's like I said, I think pineapple juice is really the only good juice. We're like, oh, that's good. The others are like, oh, okay, I guess I'll have some juice.
I mean, I don't know about that. My number one, apple juice.
Okay. My number one is orange juice.
Okay.
Yeah, I could see those being switched, but you did convince me with your logic about like orange juice is only for the mornings.
And, you know, if it's super hot outside, I remember having some orange or apple juice back in the day and just remember thinking like, this is damn refreshing. Don't spill it on yourself because ants will be there in a minute, but it's refreshing. It's good.
How often when you drink something do you spill it on yourself? Out of every 10 times you drink something, how often do you spill it on yourself?
Drinking, never. But eating is a different story.
Okay, out of every 10 times you eat something, how often are you going to get something on your shirt?
Probably 4 or 5 times out of 10.
That's a little high. What are you doing?
I mean, there are times where I'll like be eating cereal and I'm not at the table. Like I'm sitting on the couch or something. And I'll go to take the first spoonful and the milk will get like on my chin or shirt and I'll be like, okay, that's just the first spoonful. Then I go back to do it again, it happens again. I'm like, how is this happening? Like I'm even conscious of the fact of that I'm doing this, and it, you know, so yeah. But like I'm not like if I'm at the table, like the dinner table, those odds go way down. But if I'm like on the couch or something, they go way up.
I'm probably 2 out of 10 times.
Me.
I'm probably 20%. There's a 20% chance I'm going to get some food on me.
I'm
eating. I think you're a little high. You got to adjust your.
I'm kind of scarred because my father kind of scarred me for life when I was a child, because he has always had a mustache, this big Wilford Brimley mustache, and he would eat, and like shit would get stuck in there. He would have no idea unless someone told him. And I'm like, do you not realize you have pieces of corn in your mustache? And then he'd have a cigarette. It was just gross. It just grossed me out. So that's why I think I'm a pretty clean eater for the most part, but I do tend to spill every now and again.
But wait a minute. If you're scarred for life and you're trying to be a clean eater and you still get stuff in your 50% of the time, like what happens when you're not trying? Like, do you just miss your mouth in time? Like, man, I thought you were going to go the other direction. Like, I don't feel like you're doing a very good job.
But the best part about it is right now is I can blame it on the children. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, crap, kid, you did something which made me mess up. Like, thank you.
I will say that when I get high on Friday and Saturday nights and kind of go after it a little bit, like, I do have, like, I have a sweatshirt that I have to wear on Fridays that's, like, it's completely stained from getting food all over it. Like, well, I got to wear my Friday sweatshirt because I don't want to ruin something nice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I do, oh my God, that's so embarrassing. I do have dinner shirts. Like, if I know it's going to be, like, you know, if we're having, like, a finger food or something, I'll change into one of them. I mean, it just makes sense. It's like painting shirts, right?
I don't know if I could do that. I don't have any specific dinner shirts. Well, I do have a dinner sweatshirt that I just talked about. But that's only on Friday nights do I use the dinner sweatshirt, because I know that, like, it's gonna get sloppy up there. But do you have a bib? Do you have a bib?
No, I don't have a bib. I'm not a goddamn chub, like, man child over here. Well, maybe I am.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like if you're an adult and you have a bib, I don't really care what you're eating. You're kind of saying something about yourself. Like, you just got to figure this out.
Could you imagine rolling up to, like, a restaurant with you and your wife or girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever you have, and you pull out a bib and you're just wearing the bib? That would, I mean, listen, more power to you if that's what you need, man. Good on you.
Man, you could not wear a bib in front of me if we were dating, boy or girl, within the first 2 years of a relationship. I would have to be pretty much 90% committed in order to continue to be in a relationship with you if you had a bib on while eating. Like, no, I'm out of here.
I went on a random date real fast. I went on a random date with a girl when I was in Orlando, and she had just had some teeth work done. And she would tuck napkins into, like, her neckline, but, like, they almost created, like, a little bib. And she would eat, and, like, shit would just roll off there. Roll onto the napkin and then roll onto her blouse or whatever she was wearing. And I was like, what's the purpose of wearing the napkins and looking like a fool if it's not going to work? But
did you go on a second date?
No. I didn't really get second dates. Sometimes because of you.
Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Did she call it off or did you call it off?
I mean, I did. So.
Oh, was it the bib?
We just didn't click. Well, I'll put it that way.
Okay. All right. Can I tell my drooling on stuff story?
Yeah, of course.
So I started a new job, and I was in charge of, like, meeting with all of the different representatives from different areas. And I had just had, like, a dental procedure. Not a cavity. It was something else. But I had to have, like, anesthesia, and there was, like, blood involved. And I went to all these meetings with, like, blood just dripping out of my mouth. But I did it on purpose because I thought it would be funny. Like, I didn't cancel any of them because I was like, I just wanted to see what people would do if I had, like, blood coming out of my mouth. Like, who's this new guy? Like, he's fucking crazy.
Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. Really helps us out. Doesn't have to be a big thing. Just a couple of quick words. And let us know what you think are the best juices. I really went into this thinking orange is the best juice. But maybe for the first time in the history of this show, John convinced me. His argument about orange juice only being good in the morning is a good argument.